When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hello there, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
The excitement of walking down the aisles, browsing the names and the artwork, and finally deciding on the movie you were going to take home with you. Sure, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your house, but there was something truly special about making that trip as a child, picking a movie out by hand, and pretending that a train was chasing you as you ran up to the counter to beat the rest of the customers to the checkout.
Okay.
Stretch there, guys.
That's a long one, but that's fine.
That's, like a,
that's what she said.
It's like a green mile of a stretch.
On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me, as always, the two actors who played Richard Dreyfuss's dipshit kids in the movie today, Sean Fryer and AJ Vance. How the heck are you guys?
Dad, are you done yet?
It's being dipshit.
We want to go to the fucking pool, Dad.
He said that a half hour ago.
He always does this when he's writing.
Is this that stupid story about your friend Chris who died like an idiot?
Didn't he just die? Is that why you're... Are you sad?
Let me barge into your office when you're private time and interrupt every thought you have.
Oh, yeah, son. Look at this immaculate house. I'm just going to... We have a pool. It's right around the corner. I don't need to take you to it. Okay?
I guess we'll get to it.
I guess we'll get to that. We're so delighted to have you guys here with us today. If you're new to the podcast, you are at the beginning of an episode where we take a classic movie that you love from childhood and give you every single bit of information you could ever need about the movie while dissecting it scene by scene. So stay tuned for all the fun. But before we get started, we have a few back end things to take care of. We got a segment called Review Time.
Review Time!
This is from Paul Skeezy, dudes. It's called Childhood Unlocked. I found you guys on TikTok not knowing that once I heard one episode, I needed to hear them all. Now, like a junkie hungry for another nostalgia fix, I wait with bated breath for Wednesday to come. Your movies and mini bite episodes that you do are like you're looking directly in my brain and picking all the right things. Thank you so much for all that you do, and here's hoping for years to come of that sweet nostalgic ephemera.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That we all desperately need.
Wow. We are looking inside your brain, just so you know.
Did Stephen King just do another author's like handle?
A novella?
Yeah. And
they water headphones, but us penetrating your brain. Mm. Sorry, we're doing it.
Just saying, man. Thanks, Paul Skeezy. And
Thank
we got
you.
Another one here. This is from Jen.Johnson called Number One Fan.
Oh, right.
I don't know if that's true, but we'll find out. I stumbled upon this podcast on TikTok, and I have fallen in love with them. My dad raised me on these movies, and as a growing adult, it warms my heart to come back to all of it again with a deeper meaning of these movies I have watched a billion times. I 100% recommend this podcast to anyone who loves some good old boys talking about the memories they have cherished along with these movies. P.S., thank you for making me feel so important and messaging me back on Instagram. You know what you have to do next. I don't shut up. I grow up. And when I look at you, I throw up. Can't wait for Stand By Me.
Well, Jen.
Do we have a thing for you.
I remember talking to her on Instagram. That's fun. Thanks for saying that, Jen. I appreciate that.
She's probably not listening
this
anymore.
You may or may not have inspired me to pick this movie today. Just this is what you can get if you leave reviews. You might be able to inspire us. So
I like to think that these people that write these reviews, because they're from a long time ago, you know, like we're trying to catch up on these reviews.
Yeah, that was like 3 months ago.
Right. And I like to think that they just don't listen anymore. They're I thought that show was so great. And then two episodes in, I was like, I don't like it anymore.
Yep.
Right.
I didn't hear my thing. So whatever. I'm out.
Yep.
Thank you, Jen. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Hook us up with reviews. We love it so much. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail. You know, let out that anger, frustration. Tell us how much you love us. We got a new voicemail for you. You can call us at 319-804-9596. Let's hear today's voicemail.
Yeah, penetrate our brains.
Yeah.
Yo, crew. New listener. Loved you guys throughout this whole pandemic. Watched, listened to every single episode within a week. My name is Mike. Biggest one that touched me was mostly the Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, big martial arts, 90s kid fan here.
Hell yeah.
And after listening to every single one, it got me to go back and relook at all the small spots that I didn't notice. For example, one of the, after listening to you guys talk about Ninja Turtles, I went and watched Ninja Turtles 2. I want to point out, the parts where the foot goes to steal the ooze, they actually got and stole the ooze, but yet they still stuck around and fought the turtles. Like,
idiots.
That's a huge plot hole. You already had what you wanted. Why did they just leave and avoid the conflict whatsoever? And then the turtles wouldn't know what would happen. Yep. Biggest plot hole ever. But you guys make my week every single time. Love the mini fights. Love the full reviews. I can't wait for you guys to tackle more stuff. I'm dying for you guys to talk about Jurassic Park. Hopefully that's in the future.
I hope it's in the future too, thanks, man. Brother. I hope we do Jurassic Park. Just kidding. We already did. Go back and listen to it. See what I mean? It takes a while to get through these.
Time.
So if you have called 319-804-9596 and you haven't heard your voicemail yet, it's coming.
It's coming.
It just takes a little while.
Thanks a bunch, man. That's awesome. I never noticed that about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 either. And I did watch that directly after we reviewed the first one, and I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Exactly.
I mean, hey, you know, stumbly bumblies, it's humanized lagoons.
Hey, you know what we do, man.
Yeah, try and take out the monsters before you leave. You know, get two birds with one stone.
That's right.
Get two birds stoned at once, you know?
That goons temp agency, you know, they can't always provide winners to the Foot Clan, all right?
Did they say steal the ooze, or did they say beat up the turtles and steal the ooze? I think that's what they said.
I was specifically told to kill the turtles. I don't know about you.
Well, we love you guys. Thank you for leaving a voicemail. And last but not least, one final way to support us, we got a Patreon. Patreon.com/confusedbreakfast. We have amazing perks for everybody up there. Voting on upcoming movies, access to weekly episodes that we record just for Patreon members. There are over 6 hours of audio on there just waiting for you.
Wow.
You log in, patreon.com/confusedbreakfast, and you listen to it. But we've got some super special people to talk about our Patreon, our top tier members, Dane, Joel, Tony B, Jordan, Nick Marula, Alicia, Camden Griffith, Francisco Rivera, Cameron J, Kirlana, Big Andy, Bud Larson, Anita Richard, Travis Hunziker, mm-hmm. Brian Hernandez, Nick Fulkerson, Kale James, Senior Frog, Mr. and Mrs. Roommate, Greg Jackson, Jason Davis, Daniel Skaggs, Emilio Perez, Skylar Brunson, Jordan Hooten, Brennan Meisner, Willie Cox III, Janelle Lewis, Joseph Donis, Dr. Daddy, Marshall G, Riker Garrison, Mitchell Kavanaugh, Ryan Carlton, and O. Pete.
Whoa.
Breathe.
Can we hire that dude from Micro Machines commercials to read the names off? Because, guys, this is hard.
We actually might be able to.
Okay, we're going to try to find a way to hire someone to read that really quickly in
Jesus,
Micro Machines.
Baby Jesus willing, he is still alive, but yeah.
Oh, man.
Good Lord. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank
Those
you
are our
so
top
much.
Tier Patreon members. But, boys, I think it's time to introduce today's movie. On this episode, we're going to discuss one of the quintessential coming-of-age movies ever made, a movie that was about kids but meant for adults. That special time of your life where you don't realize you are inside of a pivotal moment until it's too late. For some, it's the last real taste of innocence and the first real taste of life. But for everyone, it's the time that memories are made. Mm-hmm. We're, of course, talking about 1986, Stand By Me.
Uh-huh.
But for those of you looking to get a refresher on the movie real quick, feel free to pause this episode and give it a watch. Unfortunately, unless you guys know any different, I was only able to find it for free with a Roku subscription, and even that had commercials in it. So
gotcha.
I don't really think there's any free streaming devices out there.
Don't
but
think so.
$4.
You should just buy that shit
because
it's worth it.
Yeah, I had to spend $3.99 twice on Amazon Prime. I should have just bought it for $12.99. Yeah,
should have just bought it, man.
I'm an idiot. Yeah.
All right, Sean. So we're beginning our deep dive into Stand By Me. Time to start Sean's segment. He's going to hook us up with all the pertinent information, background info that we need to know in this movie. Sean, what you got, buddy?
Here's what I got. Produced by Bruce Evans, Reynold Gideon,
okay,
and Andrew Scheinman. Casting by Janet Hershenson. And James Jenkins.
Stop it.
Edited by Robert Layton. Cinematography by Thomas Del Ruth. Music by Jack Nietzsche. Is Nietzsche.
Nietzsche. Like Nietzsche, like or Nietzsche, like, you know, something like that.
Like the philosopher. Like the
La Fossa Flora.
Screenplay by Reynold Gideon and Bruce Evans. Based off of the novella by Stephen King himself. Directed by Rob Reiner. Starring Will Wheaton, River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, Jerry O'Connell, Kiefer Sutherland, Casey Simasco, Richard Dreyfuss, and John Cusack, and Kent Luttrell as Ray Brower, the dead body.
Hey, you said that wrong. It's Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton. Just making sure you got that right.
Got it.
You say everything else wrong. I figured you'd say that one wrong.
Yeah, well, that's the one I know, you know. Adapted by the Stephen King novella entitled The Body, Bruce Evans sent a copy of the story to writing partner Reynold. It's spelled Reynold.
I know.
Gideon.
It's okay,
it's
man.
Probably
Gideon Reynold, and Evans became massive fans of the novella and quickly got in contact with King's agent to secure the rights. Initially, the writers wanted Adrian Lyne in Decent Proposal, Jacob's Ladder, Flashdance, and Fatal Attraction he all directed. But Lyne wanted a break after making 9.5 weeks, which I'm sure it actually probably took 9.5 weeks to make that movie. They found director Rob Reiner, who was coming off of comedies like This Is Spinal Tap and The Sure Thing, which we will cover, probably both of those. Mm. Reiner kind of made the project a personal project to himself. He read the script but made little changes here and there. He kind of wanted Gordo to be the main character, and he wasn't in the original draft. After being tossed around from production company to production company, the distribution rights landed on Columbia Pictures, although they wanted a more approachable title than The Body. So they came up with Stand By Me, and Rob Reiner's like, I just like that song, so let's just go with it.
Probably a good move, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Casting the four main boys was actually sort of an easy process. Rob Reiner interviewed 70 kids out of 300 auditions. The boys kind of played their parts like they acted in real life. Will Wheaton was kind of the more timid, quiet one. And River Phoenix was kind of the more overbearing kind
bad
of
boy.
Sure.
Bad boy leader type, yep. Kind of. Let's see here. Sean Astin, Stephen Dorff, and Ethan Hawke were all considered for the role of Gordy LaChance.
I mean,
oh.
Yeah.
I'm kind of into all those.
Yeah. I can see that. Principal photography began June 17, 1985, and the film shot mostly in Brownsville, Oregon for the fictional town of Castle Rock. The railroad bridge scene was shot on McLeod River Railroad above Lake Britton in California. So two locations, that's all they had to deal with.
Sweet.
The film wrapped up in late August 1985, released on August 22nd, and made $3.8 million on its first weekend and $52 million worldwide on a budget of $8 million. It was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay but did not win.
Mm. Damn.
Yeah.
All right, dude.
That's it.
Okay, wow. So before we dive deep, we always like to talk about the insight to what we thought the first time we saw this movie, because that's what we're always battling, right? The nostalgia of childhood versus what this movie really is.
Right,
So AJ, what did you like? Tell us about the first time you saw it, when you saw it, what you gave it a rating of, all that fun stuff.
Man, first time I saw this, it was on TV, and I was watching it on my little TV in my room. And there's always something about watching it on a tube TV that like adds the nostalgia factor in even more.
Oh yeah,
like it's not clean and it's fuzzy and on this.
There's certain movies that I like watching on VHS specifically because of that.
Yeah. So, but it was definitely on TNT and getting interrupted with the commercials, and it was a TV edit of it though. Mm-hmm. So, finally being able to see it, like I think then I finally saw the full unedited version like on DVD. If I'm going off of that, like I really enjoyed it. Like I was still a young kid. I really enjoyed the movie. There are parts of it that would just hit home for me, and parts that like grossed me out though too, which I'm sure we'll get to, and kind of freak you out. I'm going to tell you guys that there's a lot of points in this that I really thought were going to be a bigger problem in my life.
Kind of spooky.
And we'll get there, but yeah, so
dogs.
Yeah, you know, the first time seeing it, I still really enjoyed it, but it was not like some wow factor, I don't think. This is like a really solid 7.3.
Nice.
What about you, Sean?
I think I saw this on, I think we taped it off of TV or something like that, and I remember the first image I ever saw, it wasn't rewound yet, and it was the kid's dead face staring up into
the
sky.
Oh my God.
So that image, seeing that for the first time, is burnt into my retinas forever. And just when I watch the movie, it just aligns with the universe and my retinas, and it's just I go into an ethereal kind of place. Ugh. But I liked it. It's a cool movie. I liked all the kids. Like, I like Sandlot so much. So I would probably give it a 6.5.
6.5. All right. All right. So I definitely did not ever rent this movie. It had to have been a TV thing. Mm-hmm. And like it was always in pieces, which is why I think it was it was always the train scene or the leeches, like no matter what, when I turned it on television. And those are frightening scenes.
Terrifying.
As a young boy. I definitely never connected with this movie right off the bat. I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. Nothing happened. I'm just like, this is dumb. So from my first original thoughts of this movie, I was probably a 4.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. It just didn't do it for me back in the day.
Gotcha.
But that's why we talk about that, and then we talk about now.
Yeah, we'll see that compares.
We'll see how that changes.
Yeah. We'll see.
But before it may not. Maybe I'll be a 4. You never know. But before we get into that full-blown film review with a modern eye, AJ always does some research for us, helps us out with those ratings and reviews from the critics. What do we got, dude?
It's that time again, guys, where we go to our favorite place on the internet to secure the best percentages
of
movies. It's called
the Tomato
Meter.
The Tomato Meter.
All right.
Wow, you guys, you just can't follow cues. You didn't give one, AJ. I get it. Anyways.
You counted off with your eyes.
One,
how am I supposed to know?
Two. It's Morse code, man. 91% on the Tomato Meter. Certified fresh for Stand By Me.
That's critics, right?
That is critical reviews. Certified fresh, 91%. Moving over to audience score, though, is 94%.
Damn, that's very similar to Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park was 92, 91. This is 91, 94. That's fairly rare that they stick right in that same feeling, you know?
Everyone's got the same thoughts about it.
So then can I take a guess then? IMDb?
IMDb,
8.2.
Okay, Sean?
I'm going to go 8.5.
8.1.
Damn, that's the same
very
as
close.
Jurassic Park.
8.1. Metascore is a 75, but 8.1 for IMDb.
Oh, yeah, that's the one where we can't get out of the sevens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yep.
And now we're in the that's two in a row
that's
in the
two
eights.
In a row in the eights.
I sleep every time AJ starts a segment.
Yeah, I'm sorry I'm so boring.
I'm just kidding.
used to be our favorite.
Yeah, I suck at this. 8.1 on IMDb. 377,000 people review this on there.
And we're going to read every single one.
And we're going to go starting with number one. Now, I'll give you a good one from the critics, okay? The critics, this is from The Telegraph. Stand By Me, 100 out of 100. Stand nice. By Me is one of those films that stands up to the test of time. It may never top any critics' films of the century list, like Citizen Kane or Raging Bull, but it has a charm and depth that seems to resonate with each generation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's valid.
Yeah. Cool.
The New York Times, however, whoever reviewed it from there, gave it a 40 out of 100.
Wow.
Some of their horsing around 1950-ish style is comical, but too much of what they do is only too plainly imposed by the movie makers. Rob Reiner's direction hammers in every obvious element in an obvious script.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for that.
There it is. Thanks, New York Times. I was trying to find kind of good and bad, just to do a little bit of contrast here, but I wanted to see what somebody in the middle thought of this.
Cool.
So I was like, all right, sounds good. So this is a 5 out of 10.
They only stood by each other for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. This doesn't even make sense. It's unrealistic. 5 out of 10, cliched and pointless. December 27th of 2008. They say, four boys go in search of a dead body, but it becomes a journey of discovery about themselves. The premise of the story, based on a King novella, is stupid and generally uninteresting, and the execution is cliched. Reiner seems unsure of where he wants to go with the film. It just rambles on pointlessly. There is an irrelevant interlude about a pie-eating contest filled with gross puking scenes. The characters are either stereotypes, the teens, or cartoon-like, the parents and other adults. The big emotional scenes are corny and forced. The framing device, where the story is related in flashbacks, is meant to be poignant, but it just falls flat.
Hmm.
5 out of 10.
That's a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
5 out of 10, like in those middle places, it's where people like really do want to try their best, I think.
Yeah.
And try to seem it's interesting. Not
like, everyone knows you can't hear a train if you put your ear on the tracks. 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that. You're right. It's not the cartoon review. It's right. The like, I'm trying to be serious here, guys.
I'm trying to take it seriously, but you know what? This is my honest opinion, and I appreciate you trying, but you're still wrong. So I'll finish it up. 1 out of 10. Damn. Very disappointing. For a best 182 film. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean, Sean?
That means something, Sean? All right.
Okay.
Doesn't even mean anything to Sean Pryor, so he's already off to a bad start.
Not a lot of things mean
However, this was again on February 14th, 2016. He had just a terrible Valentine's Day.
That's a tough year. Tough year, dude.
What is going on?
That's a tough year. So this is Justin Case the Third.
Just in case. That's not his name.
But it's spelled C-A-I-S-E, so... I don't know, mate. No, he's just trying. Warning, spoilers.
If you're coming here,
I hate it.
If you came here before you saw the movie,
don't do it.
So, Justin Case said this. I cannot believe this film is so highly rated. A terrific disappointment. It is impossible and unrealistic, but not presented as fantasy. The dialogue for 12-year-olds is corny and stupid at times, or else ridiculously adult and philosophical. It is, for the most part, poorly acted, predictable, and badly directed. Kids in Oregon in the 50s didn't behave like New York hoodlums. The cheesy ending, telling what happened to his friends, was a cop-out, and there was no resolution of the threat from the Cobra's leader. There was also no resolution of Gordy's problems with his father and dead brother, either. Altogether boring and a waste of time.
Maybe that's not what it's about whatsoever. I don't know. Maybe you just missed the point there. I don't know.
I feel like you just missed the point.
Even in movies like Lord of the Rings that are 14 hours long director's cuts, you still don't know, like,
yeah.
Well, what happened after that?
Yeah,
like, you still never fucking know what happened.
What happened to the Smaug? Man,
Smaug.
What happened to Smaug? It's like, no,
it doesn't matter.
I don't even know it. I don't even know if they show it. That might be a bad example.
Idiots, dude.
Yeah. So people just trying and forcing their way through like a negative review and just half the time it just doesn't make sense. They just aren't paying attention.
Yes.
I feel like they were looking at their phones most of the time.
Yes.
And then looked up. They're like, I don't know what's going on.
I don't get it.
My opinion on this is that means this guy has got to be like, in his 60s or 70s reviewing on IMDb, and because he's calling things in Oregon in the 50s unrealistic, as if he was there, as if he time travels.
That's very true.
And that's one of my big upsets. I've seen black and white photos and they didn't look like that, and it's like, well, not too bad. I don't know what to tell you, man.
Sorry.
Yeah, so that's my only thing.
God. All right, well, thanks, AJ. But before we get started here on a scene-by-scene analysis, I want to tell you about a cool experience that we all had last weekend.
Oh.
Many of you know our sponsor, Cedar Ridge Distillery. We've been talking about them for months here. They're located in our backyard here in Iowa. And not only do they distill the best whiskey, but they have a physical location that you can visit and eat and drink at. We all decided to go there last weekend to celebrate as a group, hit some big milestones. Why don't we just go sit down? We had some unreal wood-fired pizza from those guys. Like, probably one of the best pizzas I've ever had in my entire life. Whatever that meat one was.
Yeah.
The meat one. I think that's what it's called.
It's just called The Meat One.
The Meat One.
Sean and I got some old fashions with the flagship bourbon.
You bet.
Perfection. I had like 4 of those.
Uh-oh.
Then AJ decides to get the old whiskey sour, which they use their wheat whiskey in. He let me try it, and that was tasty. So we got a few of those. We even then decided to make New York sours.
Correct.
Which you pour red wine over the top of that and float it on top.
Correct.
Had about 2 or 3 of those. Then we enjoyed the rest of the beautiful evening sipping a bottle of wine on the patio outdoors. Had a couple of those. Point of the story is that we practice what we preach here at the Confused Breakfast. Cedar Ridge Distillery is truly one of the best whiskeys, and the fact that they help us support our podcast should be enough to get all of our listeners to try a bottle. If you're in the Midwest, go grab some at your local stores and distributors. Think about a trip to see them in person. Take the tour. If you can't find it, go to CedarRidgeWhiskey.com. Order a bottle straight to your door. Do it. You won't be sorry. Make sure to enjoy that responsibly. We definitely enjoyed it responsibly. We not drive vehicles.
Right.
Which is very important that we did not drive vehicles.
Right. My only disappointment of the night is that we didn't dip into that Slipknot cask at all. But I wanted to really bad. RIP Joey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely now after that, we needed to do that. So, and hook us up with the a voicemail or a text or a message. Let us know that you ordered it, how much you loved it. We would love to pass that on to those beautiful people at CedarRidgeWhiskey.com.
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 Well, boys, what do you say we pop on some music from Ben E. King, grab our sleeping bags, supplies, and hair combs, practice our leech removal, and meet up with our friends to go on the adventure of a lifetime.
A couple of those things, yes.
Better put your ear to the tracks because this episode is coming right at you.
Whoa.
Here we go.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't.
Gordy LaChance sits in his car reading the headline of a newspaper article about a man who had been stabbed to death. He is overcome with a wave of nostalgia and begins to narrate the story of when he was 12 years old. The story begins in 1959. Gordy is hanging out with his friends Chris Chambers and Teddy Duchamp. Vern Tessio joins the group and tells them that he overheard his older brother Billy discussing the location of the body of Ray Brower, a kid who had recently gone missing. Gordy and the others decide to go find the body and accept recognition as local heroes.
All right.
Do you guys think Richard Dreyfuss looks the same age in every movie?
Yes.
I will say this. Richard Dreyfuss sans beard looks like an unfinished drawing. that's what I think. It is strange. It is so strange. His mouth requires facial hair. I think so.
Anyways. How old do you think he was in that movie when he filmed it? Because I looked this up. I had to know. Because he just always seems the same age.
Yeah, go ahead.
He always seems very old. No guesses?
I think 38.
Damn, bro.
Mm. He nailed it, didn't he?
38.
Oh, you serious? I did not know that. That's a fucking old guess.
I would have said like 54 or
really?
Something. He just seems like this old, wise man. But yeah. He was 30. And Richard Dreyfuss had already gone through, what, like Jaws and American Graffiti. Oh, yeah. And he was a pretty well-known big name at this point, wasn't he?
Definitely. I think he did My Girl before this, too. Maybe it came out a little bit after, a little bit before or something. But I think he won an Oscar for that. So he's already like pretty well-established. And to just be like the narrator of the movie, which they went through two other people.
Yeah.
I forget their names, but they did film a portion of it with one of those actors. It just wasn't working out for some reason. And so Rob Reiner and Richard Dreyfuss were like high school buddies or college buddies or something like that. And he's like, hey, want to come do a movie real quick? And
I dig it. He's got a great voice for this. It works very, very well.
I agree.
Very soothing.
Yes.
Yeah. They set this up so quick. Like, and it's it's like the whole setup is so efficient and immediate. The kids are established and you kind of know the dynamic right off the bat, and the whole plot is set up within the first 10 minutes.
Like even before that. Like,
yeah, I was kind of shocked of how like immediate and efficient like the story is just placed in front of you. Like we're not even with the kids for, I don't know, 6 minutes and they're already talking about the dead body. You know, as soon as Vern gets there, that really, and that completes the four of them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like so quick. I was like, whoa, I forgot how quick this movie moves.
They play out so well, and I love his explanation of each person as they come into the cabin or as they kind of show each person. Talks a little bit about him, but you get Chris is the leader of our group, and Teddy is the craziest guy we ever knew, basically. And they've got a good shot of him doing his laugh and like smoking his cigarette. and then you see his ear and stuff and like.
I never noticed that as a kid. Never noticed
that as a kid either.
I never looked at it because later on, you know, they, it gets mentioned and he kind of like turns his head to kind of like, you know, like he's acknowledging it. And I'm like, I still can't really see it.
Yeah.
Then you have Vern, who's obviously like the guy that they pick on. And it's hilarious because their dynamic really does seem genuine.
Yeah.
It feels like the kids are trying to, they do what boys that age do. They try to act older than they are.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So inside this acting, they have to actually act like they're old, like those kids who want to act older than they are, you know? And then picking on Vern is just like so natural to them. Yeah. And it's just like, just like, I love how they bait him into everything. And they're like, I ran all the way home. and then they're like, okay,
fine. We're over it. Go ahead, man.
I ran all the way home. It's okay. No. And then they're like, fine, screw you guys. I won't even tell you. It's like, no. Go ahead, Verno. What's up? He's like, okay, so. He really wants to tell him.
So this has to be a nod to Goonies, right?
Right.
It's literally the same intro where the portly fat kid is so excited and has something to say, but everybody's making fun of him.
Oh,
and he's
my
like,
God, yeah.
The most amazing thing ever. You guys, I have to tell you about this. I mean, Goonies was 85. This is 86. Like,
wow.
That's almost identical right there. That scene is.
Yep.
Come on, let me in. I got to tell you about this.
I gets the knocker, I think, or something. Yeah,
he doesn't even do the knock.
Yeah.
Come on, guys, open up.
Vern.
Yeah, I think he even goes, it's Vern. Yeah. It's Chunk.
I love their whole dynamic and everything, and I love the whole setup where Vern is like eavesdropping on his brother and his goon friend, them telling like how they found the dead body and stuff like that, and they just kind of want to keep it under wraps. But he's like digging up his pennies or trying to find his pennies.
No, by the way,
sincerely, I haven't found my pennies.
Sincerely, and he's like, him trying to find his pennies in the line. I haven't found my pennies yet. I used that line as the title of a song that I, that I wrote. It's called "I Haven't Found My Pennies Yet."
That's a nod right there, yeah. Man.
Go look up that hit.
That hit.
Just type in, I haven't found my pennies yet, and you'll find it.
There you go.
So question for you. What kid were you at that age? At age 12, which kid were you? And you're allowed to have combos if you want.
Yeah. I was probably Gordy.
Think so?
Yeah.
Gordy. The sensitive, creative kid, kind of.
Gordy and Vern, and like a little bit of Vern. Yeah. Mostly Gordy.
What about you, man?
Probably a mix of Vern and Chris.
Okay.
Actually, which I know is an odd thing, but there were times like I really felt like a leader, like I wanted to make a decision or something. But then again, I'm also a younger brother and I was tagging along a lot. So depending on the group or the dynamic I was in, that's kind of how it would flow. If I was among friends, might have been more of a Chris. If I was among my old brothers and their friends, might have been more of a Verno, man.
Actually, that's very true. Like I probably had a little bit of all of them, but it depended on the situation.
Yeah,
and maybe that's what's so perfect about this is they're stereotyping these types of kids, but like no one you know was exactly that kid. Everybody had these different moments of who they were and like depending on the situation.
Yeah, it's like it kind of goes back to when we talked about the Breakfast Club. I think everyone tries to define who they are or try to assimilate with one. And then I think the big thing is like I think we said at one point, or at least we said afterwards, you kind of find out you're really a little bit of everyone.
Yeah.
You know, in your life
you're not a stereotype. Yeah. You're just like who you are.
Correct.
And you don't fit into a mold.
Right. And it's good to have these characters who are dynamic enough, though, in different ways.
It's like us being a podcast, a trinity, if you would. Maybe adding a fourth person wouldn't work, you know? Maybe taking away one wouldn't work or something like that.
Right.
But then, like, you think of things like that probably were inspired by this, like South Park, the four boys, you know?
Yeah,
like the four main ones. You're like, which one of those are you? You know, are you the fucking obnoxious Cartman? Or, you know, it's that whole thing. And for these actors to fill these characters out so fully, it's their performance in Rob Reiner's direction where it's just like, yeah, I mean, they nailed it. There's so much to take from each of them, you know?
Yeah.
Did you feel, though, on rewatch, it was so amazing how deep and three-dimensional these characters were and how they had these undertones and their hard exteriors or whatever, but they were different on the inside and they had their moments where they broke down. Vern was two-dimensional completely on this rewatch. Like,
yeah.
He never offers anything of like emotional substance, right? He doesn't have this crazy backstory, or he doesn't like become a huge a guy that changes the script around with something that he does. He's just the guy.
He brought the comb.
That's
kind of what the point I'm going to bring up right now. Okay. Just like, I think you're right. He is more two-dimensional and everything, but I think you could argue the thing that he does offer is just like the, when things get serious, there's always Vern coming in to say something and being like, shit's not that serious.
That's true. Okay.
It's, just kind of bringing everything down. He's not doing it on purpose. Like, he's not being like, hey, the guys, this is my purpose. Like, how about things aren't right. as serious as they seem? He's like saying stupid shit, and they're just
because he doesn't know.
Yeah, he's so affable. So he's like, let's just live life affably.
You're right. He is. Okay. He's almost oblivious to the world around.
That's it right there.
Yeah. Totally. my moving into that though, and they come up with this plot really quick. Like you said, like it starts to move really fast. They're like, no, this, it makes sense. Like, Vern, we'll just do exactly what you said. We'll all say that we're going to stay out at your place. You say that you're going over to Teddy's, and then the next day we're going to go to the racetrack thing or whatever. And like, we'll be good till, and like, they're like, I'm in. Let's do it. Vern, I don't know. It's like, it was your damn idea, bro.
You brought it to
You brought it up. And he's like, why are you backing out now? And then come on, Verno.
Guys, I don't know about this. Sincerely.
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 No, sincerely.
All right, so let's move this party along. Come morning, Gordy goes to fetch his canteen in his older brother's room. We learn that his older brother, Denny, has passed away a few months ago, and his mother and father have not taken it well. Gordy meets Chris in town, and after messing around with Chris's gun, they have a run-in with a few members of a gang led by Ace Merrill. Gordy and Chris meet up with Teddy and Vern at the train tracks and start their journey. A few hours in, while counting their money to buy provisions, Teddy intends to dodge an oncoming train. Chris, however, pulls him off before the stunt can be performed.
Okay, so I just want to say, like, so this is where John Cusack comes in as the brother Denny. And he's sort of like the football star, and like the parents are like kind of banking on him to like be the one. Like he's seeing
get us out of this town.
He's got some good friends. He's seeing a good girl, you know.
Yeah.
But it's
got a swell gal.
He's got a swell gal.
She is a swell.
Take her
gal.
To the ball. It's never a good thing when you walk into, I don't know, someone's room and it's the dead brother's intact room. Oh boy,
it's not good.
It's not good, and they're just so dejected. Like these parents, like they play that off really good, and you really see how that affects Gordy so well in this movie. They're just dejected from everything and not paying attention to him whatsoever. It's like everyone grieves differently, but you can't just fucking give up like that. And it really makes me sad.
Dude, I hate it. It seems to happen in movies all the time. Like, I understand your son dies, you're gonna be having some trouble here. This is not good. You're not supposed to watch a kid die. No. But I fucking hate how movies there's always this like, we hate you though, kid. It should have been you who died.
Wrong kid died.
maybe I fucking had a sheltered life or whatever, but I can't see any parent that I know being like, it should have been you, blah blah blah, fuck you dumb kid. You just like,
why can't you be more like your brother?
Yes, I don't see anyone saying that. Like, if that had happened in my family, like if I had died, they wouldn't have said that to my brother. They would have been like, well, you're all I got, kid. We got to get through this together.
Yeah.
They seem a little bit more like staunchly traditional parents, like in the back in the 1950s and everything like that. Like life's supposed to be lived a certain way. You're not supposed to do art. You're supposed to learn a trade or fucking play football, you know?
Yeah. When his dad comes up, he's like, you found it. He's like, he's like, and he closes the door and he's just like, why can't you have friends like Denny's? And he's just like,
why don't
come
you
on.
Shut the fuck up?
That's what I'm saying.
How about you eat my ass, old man? But
like, now we got a movie, dude. Oh,
yeah, that's right. Now it gets interesting. No, he's just like, oh my God. He's like, he says, he's like, Dad, they're not that bad. He's like, oh, sure, a thief and two Phoebes. It's like, he says, Phoebes, and I had to look it up. And like this must have been like a slang term back in the day. Or
yeah, what, yeah, like and swell.
It's yeah, exactly. And it's kind of it's on the play of like a derogatory like enactment of feeble, like
okay,
feeble minded.
Gotcha.
So like stupid or like Phoebes. Incompetent, basically. And like they're never gonna go anywhere. And it's just like so he just said Phoebes. I'm just like what?
In his mind, he's got that video playing of all that all those dudes being like oh.
That's right. Just dropped
fucking
it.
Fucking burned it.
Bam.
So Mr. LaChance is played by Marshall Bell.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And like he is so recognizable mm-hmm. as a B-list actor. I knew him, but I knew none of the movies he was in. Like and I looked him up, of course, in tons of movies. For me, after looking back and realizing what he was in, most notably, he was Carl Mace. He was the cop from Airheads. Who's on the phone yeah. with Michael Richards' character yes. talking about his wife,
oh,
like leaving
man.
Him and shit like that. Yes. That was where my mind immediately went with him. And then Mrs. LaChance, did you recognize her?
Uh-huh. I did recognize her, but I don't know what from.
Same thing. Like her name's France. Yeah, she was his wife in Airheads. No, Frances Lee McCain. She was not in a ton of stuff, but the one that I was most notable of was she was Stella Baines. Lorraine Baines' mom in Back to the Future.
Oh,
when he goes back
wow.
in the past, like Stella,
oh, yeah.
come on, another hit one of these damn kids with a car, Stella.
yeah,
I don't
now,
know.
Marty,
I don't
I should
know,
probably
Marty.
Call your mom.
I feel like you're our responsibility now.
I should call your mother.
Call your mother.
Do I know your mother? I think you do.
I think you probably do. Well, that I should
her.
Give her a call.
That was her.
That was her.
Frances Lee McCain.
I love when. He meets up with Chris again. He's got the gun. He shows him the gun, everything like that.
Oh,
he's
man.
Like, it's not loaded. He shoots it. He's like, Jesus! Their fucking
Dude,
reaction is so good.
Oh, unbelievable acting. Because like when they yell Jesus, their face is like they really shot a gun. It was
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
Jesus!
I wonder if that was a touch or something like that. Like they just put a blank in there and didn't tell him or something. I don't know if they could have done that, like as kids, but maybe.
Then you get the... Okay, there's a lot of... In this movie, there's a lot of like Mandela effect. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where you remember things differently and you go... It's like the Berenstain Bears... title
yeah.
book
instead of Berenstain.
Instead of Berenstain, it's Berenstain or whatever.
Berenstain or Berenstain.
Berenstain. Yeah,
we can't do this.
Okay,
we're gonna do it.
And we're going. And so there's a lot of things in this movie that I feel like that, and I'll try to mention them as we go along. One of the things I feel like I remember the lady who comes out. Hey, who's lighting cherry bombs out here?
Oh yeah,
I remember her being a lot older.
Okay,
it's really weird. I know it's, and I know these are small things, but like I remember her being older, and then you look at her and she's like a young lady.
Is it because we're old now?
Maybe.
She was old to you back then.
Yeah, she was.
And now you're like, I'm the same age as her,
you're
so
right.
She can't be old.
Time goes on, they stay the same age.
That's the magic of movies, my friend. I know that if he's a kid and they're kids and they're getting bullied by Ace and everything like that, but if someone took my dead brother's hat that he gave me, like the only thing that I have him to remember me, but well, not the only thing because he's got an entire room still, but... If someone took the thing that he gave me literally, I would lose my fucking mind to get
I would
back.
Have pulled that gun on him right there.
Oh my god, dude, yes.
Actually, you're right. Shit.
Oh, dude, hands down. So I read a piece that both characters confirmed it, although it wasn't confirmed in the movie. Both Kiefer Sutherland and Will Wheaton. both said that you never see that hat come up again after he puts it on Eyeball. And so part of that is he gives it to Eyeball because he truly doesn't give a shit about anything.
Yes.
He just cares about picking on them. And then you never see it again because both actors confirm that they just threw it away.
They went around the corner and
not
threw it
because
in a trash
he
can.
Wanted it, but because he wanted to cause problems for Gordy and pick on them.
He's a true psychopath.
Yeah,
yeah, it was also a directing note by Rob Reiner, because I think Kiefer Sutherland did take it and put it on himself at first. And then he's like, no, you should put it on someone else because you don't actually give a fuck about
so
it. It's not the hat.
And there's your memories from childhood. I was waiting for when he was going to take the hat back.
Yeah.
I thought for sure, like, that hat's a big deal. We're going to take that back at the end of the movie. And it never happened.
Yeah.
And then I read the same thing. It's like, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Really?
Well, it's like a roller coaster almost. Like, you're clicking your way up to the big fall or whatever. Like, that whole scene when he has his hat, like, the scene can't end without him getting that hat back, or I'm going to be so fucking pissed.
Yeah.
And then
it just solidifies, like, how you feel about him the entire movie, you know?
So one of the things that I noticed about, I love about these old movies, I call them old. I mean, I guess it's the late 50s and it wasn't even made then. But yeah. How like, maybe it's because today's world is so shitty and like loyalty means nothing in today's world. And oh, your yeah. What you say means nothing. It just doesn't mean that. But back in the day, it meant so much. And they really play on that. You know, like after the train dodge, skin it. Like yeah. You have to yeah. do this.
Right.
Yeah. If you don't do this, we are like everything's messed up. Yeah. You right. have to. I am sorry. Yeah. Skin my fucking hand or else we will never be able to get back to normal.
Yeah, it's like we can't.
Well, I think he said like swear on your mother's life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is so they take that literally and you have to do this.
Yeah, we're going to spend the next day and a half, 2 days just being together. Pissy. Like we can't have this bad blood between us, you know.
It's
we're a team.
It's like when he fires the gun and he says, mm-hmm. "You swear?"
Yes.
I swear, man. Promise. Like,
yes.
It's very sincere. It's very important.
Pinky,
you know.
Promise.
Yeah. One of the things about their first, the first encounter with Ace and Eyeball, right when they take the hat. One of the things I noticed was they call his brother's name. They call him Eyeball,
mm-hmm.
and so what Kiefer Sutherland, what Ace does to Chris is he flicks his cigarette and he pulls him down. And he's threatening the cigarette into his eye, right? And if you look at Eyeball, he's got a similar scar on his eye.
Oh, wow.
That looks like it was from a cigarette burn. That, like, the same fucking thing that probably Ace did to him at some point of, like, going alpha on him.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
I did not notice that.
So it's almost, like, confirmed, like, he will do this to you.
I thought he would.
Yeah. And so he takes it back and he lets him up. And
like, take it back.
Yeah.
Ugh, what a piece of shit.
Crazy, yeah. Man.
I got some Ace fan theories coming up in a little
bit. Okay, cool.
Pretty happy about these.
Okay.
I will just say that Kiefer Sutherland is terrifying in this movie.
Terrifying.
I really do think he is terrifying.
It looks like he has yellow eyes like the dude in Christmas Story.
Yeah.
You know? I love when Vern says, I brought the comb. I love it. But one of my favorite lines is like, yeah, we take a shortcut. You know, go through the forest instead of going through the back roads and everything like that. Because Vern's like, we could go this way. And he's like, we could shave off this much time if we go through the woods, Vern. We're just going to do that. And he's like, we'll take a shortcut. That's pussy. Hey, it's a long ways. I just love the way he says, hey, it's a long way.
It's a long way.
The train dodge. Like, what a weird thing.
Yeah.
Train dodge. Dig it.
Dig it. It's such a strange thing to like think to do. I guess I've never thought of that as like a game I would want to play.
You guys didn't do that then?
No, fuck, you did?
We did, but like it wasn't like if it was right here when we're going to dodge it.
No,
we
just stood a quarter mile away.
Exactly. We stood in front of it and we're just like, this, we could just stay here, you know? But we got off the tracks like
it's almost
right,
like
a quarter
game
mile
of
away.
Chicken, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, how long will you stand there kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what it is, but the concept blew my mind.
I didn't have any train tracks near me growing up, so like when I saw them, I was deathly frightened from movies like this, where it's like, oh, I'm not going to walk across that.
Correct.
I'm not gonna, the train could come flying on over and kill me like that Ray Brower guy.
Dude, yeah, have you seen Back to the Future 3?
Fuck,
dude. We don't know what's going to happen.
We don't know. So the money they have to go buy provisions and because they didn't bring anything or whatever is $2.37.
That's what it adds up to?
Yeah, everyone's collective money. Did you do the math on how much that actually was at those times?
No, I did
you
not.
You son of a bitch, that is your job.
I saw it, but I didn't do it because I wanted you to. But 237, Stephen King, The Shining.
Oh, shit.
237 is the room. Actually, not in his actual book. It's 217, but Stanley Kubrick... Shining is 237.
What is 237 even stand for? It's just his passcode to his locker or something like that when he was in high school.
237 was the room in The Shining.
The tribute to it is right.
It could be because King's version is 217, so Kubrick changed it to 237. But this movie did come out 5 years before.
Okay,
so maybe Rob Reiner is a fan.
Shit, you're right, man.
Yeah, who knows.
237, there's no way he's going to be able to buy anything.
Dude, I had $3 on me this morning, and I was like looking at buying a monster. I'm like, I can't buy a monster.
I can't do that. $2.37 in today's value is equivalent purchasing power of about $24.03.
Damn, I mean that's cool.
Yeah, so,
that'll feed them for sure.
That's not bad. 7 cents, Vern.
That is probably another favorite.
So what is 7 cents? Like a dollar then?
Yeah, less
than a dollar.
It's probably. No, that's probably close to like almost $2.
Okay. I mean, so collecting your pennies was just like that's a good.
Think if he had a jar of pennies.
Yeah.
Think he had a jar of pennies that
he was going to be rich.
He buried.
Dude.
That means if he's got if he's got $20 in there max, right?
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
All right, let's move this party along. So they soon arrive at a local junkyard that is rumored to be guarded by a ferocious dog named Chopper. However, the yard is empty and the four rest in the shade of a car hood for a few minutes while Gordy goes to retrieve food at the store on the other side. On his way back, Gordy is chased by Chopper and barely makes it over the top. After a brief confrontation with the junkyard owner, they continue on the tracks to a large bridge. While crossing, a train comes and nearly kills Vern and Gordy. Lots to unpack there.
Lots to go with. The first thing I have to mention is when they flip for who's got to go.
Yes.
And then Vern's four tails. He says, four tails. Oh, that's a goocher. I don't like this. Sincerely.
Tell me you looked up what a goocher was.
I didn't.
Because I know gooch as the spot between my balls and
correct.
My butt.
Yeah.
The vanilla strip of the Neapolitan. That's a gooch.
That's good.
A taint.
That's right.
Scranus. Is that what he's talking about?
It's got it. Like, well, he's talking about it like it's a bad omen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
it's a goocher.
Like, oh, that is a goocher. He's like, no, Vorno, there's no such thing as goochers and all this other stuff you're talking about. They're trying to debunk him and everything.
So
you
wait,
know?
Mike, were you like with a girl one time and she was like kind of getting down to that nether region and she's like, oh, what's this? And you're like, it's a goocher.
No, I was like, that's my scranus. It's got the spot between my scrotum and my
still
anus.
Not getting it. Still not getting it. What else? What? I don't know what that is.
Vanilla strip of the Neapolitan.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, okay, cool.
So was it really a goocher? Like, did bad things happen after that happened?
Right. I mean, they
depends on how you look at it. Right?
Not good things, but would things have changed?
I don't know. That depends on if you're superstitious, right?
There you go.
It's a fun thing to put in there and think about for sure.
Absolutely.
It's really cool because it. What is it? Four times you said, or is it
four
twice?
Tails?
Four tails.
Four tails. Happened.
So I'm guessing four heads is like a really good thing.
Maybe yeah.
A sleucher.
A tainter. The really cool thing for me, ever since we've been doing these movies and relooking, like I'm thinking more about past movies we've done based on movies we're watching now, and the Chopper myth versus reality is very Sandlot, right?
Very much.
You're telling these stories and, oh my God, there's a giant dog and it's trained to eat your balls.
Right.
And it turns out, no, it's just this little dog.
It's just this little dog.
Like, he probably actually wants to kiss you if he can actually get over that fence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good.
I always felt bad for the dog, honestly.
Totally,
he was in the middle of this, and then they go back and forth with this old guy, and like I don't feel good about either side of that conversation.
No,
I'm going to be honest with you guys, okay? They were being little shitheads, but at the same time, he was being an asshole. Like, you know what I mean? Like both sides of it.
He rubbed it in deep on Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
And honestly, we'll probably talk about some of these actors as we move forward, but that for me was Corey Feldman's best scene. When they had to hold him back,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
holy shit, man! Yeah. Like I felt that. Mm-hmm. and maybe that has to deal with the fact that this was very close to his character, and
very,
I know
yes.
he had a rough childhood, and he probably channeled some deep shit for that because it felt completely real to me. Every emotion he had there.
Several of the actors felt really close to their roles, and two I think in particular were him and also River Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Like because he was like both of them like felt like really assimilated with their characters, which again speaks to the casting of they wanted it to be the way that they act, mm-hmm. you know. So yeah, that was an interesting thing.
Yeah, River Phoenix's parents were like pretty much in a cult when he was growing up. It was called Children of God. So that goes to Joaquin Phoenix as well. So they kind of had a rough kind of thing with them.
Yeah.
But Chopper, sick balls.
Chopper, sick balls.
Damn. Chopper, sick balls.
And that's
Richard Dreyfuss narrating that. It's so perfect.
Chopper, sick balls.
What I heard.
I kind of relate. We get a flashback when he goes to the actual store and the guy's talking about his brother and stuff like that. You're Daniel LaChance's brother. The dad is annoying as fuck. I can't stand. Who's the actor again?
LaChance's dad?
Yeah.
It was Marshall Bell. It's That's like, the actor's
Dorothy,
name.
Dorothy, don't talk to the boy about girls. He's got a game to focus on. I was like, dude, shut the fuck up. And then Denny's just like, oh, dad, did you read Gordy's story? He's really cool. He's like, yeah, yeah. So how about them yardages? You know, whatever the fuck. It's just he doesn't give a fuck. It's so annoying to me. But I get like that dynamic. And I'm not saying I had a childhood like similar to that at all, but my brother was a football player, and when I go to family gatherings, no one wants to talk about the podcast that I do. I mean, nowadays they're fine with it because it's
now that we're super famous, they're cool with it, right?
but like shit that I did back then, here's this drawing of Artemis Fowl. I don't know.
what's your brother's name?
Chris.
They're like, Chris. Oh man, what a great game yesterday. Sean, cool trench coat.
That's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, I probably scared him for sure.
But you're just wearing sunglasses inside again, huh? Okay.
Oh, you painted your face white and put the crow painting on? That's fun.
Great. Yeah. Anyway, Chris, how's that gal of yours? Yeah.
I get that, but it's like they hold that in such high regard, especially being from small town and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It is like that, and you do kind of feel a little alienated or a little separate from your brother, or like maybe not like looked as fondly upon from different family members and stuff like that. I get that whole thing a lot. And it's with my whole deal wasn't nearly like that at all. But
oh yeah. But you feel like that, you see what they're playing off of. I get that.
It's really interesting because I think that those types of things are such a big, I want to say bigger deal back in like the 50s per se, because it's not like everything was so readily accessible. You know what I mean? Like, that's why, like, at the beginning, they're like, oh, like, we could probably get our picture in the paper.
That's why they're doing all of this, is just to get a picture in the paper.
I bet they'd pin a medal on you, Vern. Might even be on TV. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And that ends up being why Ace and them want to do it, too. They all, like, that, holy shit, we could be on the newspaper.
Like, this could turn into something good for us.
You're
like,
right, man.
Good reputation. And you kind of apply the same mentality of, like, going playing football, and like this is something that's like really tangible, or like it's a really special thing, you know, to go to a good school and then playing in the big leagues and stuff like that. That's when this was really coming to a big deal for like the NFL and stuff, you know. So
so we get to the train bridge, right? I mean, for me, it's the most iconic moment of this movie. The tension is unreal because everyone knows that train's gonna come.
Yeah.
But yet it just he keeps looking back, no train. Mm-hmm. Keeps looking back, no train.
It's the billowing of the smoke, man.
Yes, like, and you don't see it, but you just see the smoke come around the corner. Train. I mean, that is terrifying to me.
That is absolutely terrifying.
I really thought that trains were going to be a bigger problem in my life because of this movie, guys. I am dead serious. And especially on those trestle tracks, like bridges, stuff like that, that you have nowhere to go but either forward or over, and you got to choose. And, oh, man, looking down. And by the way, I always felt terrible for Vern when he loses the comb.
Yeah.
He really thought he was doing something special. He's like, well, I brought it for you guys, so you guys.
I don't have any hair.
Why'd you bring a comb? You don't even have any hair. It's just like, I brought it for you guys. I was thinking of you, you know.
AJ,
it's like,
you do know that trains are pretty easily avoidable, though.
Yeah. You say that.
It's like where there's tracks, there's trains. Where there's not tracks,
there's not trains.
Good chance there's probably not a train.
I don't know.
Really good chance.
I don't know.
Unless if we're talking about Inception. You never know.
I've seen Speed as well. So
Keanu and Cedric Bullock are involved. Yeah. They might be flying out of nowhere.
Bullshit. Man.
I used to, you know, I got a ton to say about this train scene. So I used to be so mad. Like, why did they walk so slow across those tracks? Why do you not run as fast as you can? However, upon rewatch.
Okay.
What if you ran as fast as you could, and then you got to the middle sooner than you normally would have, and then a train came from the other direction?
Or because the tracks aren't the panels or whatever aren't like that spaced out. So if you ran, you would have to coordinate jumping on each one of those woods, and you'd risk putting your foot in between one of those, and you're fucking done.
You're
after
done
that.
For it.
Yeah.
I just, it makes so much more sense as an adult. I'd go slow too.
Yeah.
For the making of it, though, they did put down flat wooden things for the stunt people.
The
stunt women, actually.
Stunt women, yes.
Anxiety between Vern and Gordy is just, get up! Get up! And, like, Vern's face, the terror on his face running is just like, oh, man. He didn't know he could run like that.
He was half crying because he's like, why are my legs going so fast?
he had no idea. And then when he throws him over the side, the first time I saw that, I was really concerned. Like the first time I saw it, did you guys have any concern? Did you know like they found like the side?
I was concerned this time because where they end up is just like a bunch of boulders.
I know,
like that would fucking hurt.
It would hurt.
They are scratched the fuck up.
Yeah.
So the one of the cool things about this is that when they did shoot this. They use a super huge long lens, and so what that does in Panavision is that they zoom it in all the way, and so the train looks fucking huge behind them.
I know exactly what shot you're talking about.
Yeah, and when they're running away towards the camera, it wasn't even moving; it's just billowing smoke. Yes. And so when they're running towards the camera, it's slowly zooming out, so the train looks like it's coming towards them.
That shot is unbelievable because it's not fake. It is like there's a gigantic train 1 foot behind them.
Yeah,
But that is so and most of that was real. Yep. There were a few like when they actually fall off. That was you can tell things get
some,
a little grainy,
some
there,
little hazy.
There.
Yeah,
yeah, a few of them. But for the most part, those were really well done shots. Mm-hmm. I wondered how they did that. That's amazing.
Yeah, just a simple fucking camera trick. It's so cool.
Holy shit. Also, I have a problem with this, though. You know, when you got one track of train, you're gonna slow down other train track movements because you got to let one train come through before another one comes through. There were four cars on that train. There was like a coal train, a caboose, and like one little like thing holding a flatbed with holding like a crane on it.
Yeah,
you think you could take more with you maybe if you're gonna clog up the train? There's only four fucking cars on that thing.
It was not a long train, and you're just like I literally thought this time around I was like shit. Teddy and Chris are on the other side of that. They're not gonna be able to get to him for at least a few. Oh, there it's the end of it. Okay, never mind.
End of the train. There was only four cars. It's no big deal.
Oh, I guess that's it. Okay.
Guess we know when the next train's due.
Yeah.
Okay, so nightfall arrives and they set up camp for the night. Gordy tells them all a story about a kid named Lardass who takes revenge on the rest of his town during a blueberry pie eating contest. After everyone falls asleep, Chris and Gordy have a deep conversation about the future. The next morning, Ace and his gang are seen spending recreational time smoking and hitting mailboxes with baseball bats as they drive around town. Billy and Charlie eventually blab about finding Ray's body. Intent on claiming credit for himself, Ace heads out with them to find the body.
Oh, no. So this campfire scene is really funny. I like when Vern is cooking his whatever the hell they're eating. And,
this is like steak or something. Yeah. It's meat.
It was his hamburger.
Okay. Yeah, that's what it looked like.
$1.50 a hamburger is what the guy at the store says. And they're making like basically
on
meatballs on their sticks.
That makes sense. That's pretty cool, man. I mean, I used to do that shit. Did you guys used to like go out with your friend or your friends and just make a fire and like cook weenies and shit?
Yeah, it's extremely dangerous to do that.
Absolutely.
If you think back to
especially in the house, you know. I love the line where he's like, oh shit guys, what am I gonna eat? Because it falls in the fire. Like, shit, what am I gonna eat? He's like, watch, kick your dick, be a pretty small meal.
Just rip it on him. Buds
kids
again.
Being kids, man.
Yeah,
trying to be adults as kids.
Exactly.
There you go, man. That so we got to talk about Lardass first. That whole story and scene is awesome. I can see how it, I think maybe when I was younger, I didn't understand how it fit and like why it was there. But on rewatch, it's just such a great way to sort of break everything up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like there's no more threats. We're just sitting here now.
Right.
We're just telling stories.
Relaxing with a smoke. They all look so awkward smoking their cigarettes. Yeah. Like
best time
to
eat.
Cool.
Best time to smoke's after a meal,
after
man.
After a good meal.
After a good meal, man.
Cherish these moments.
And it really plays on like they want to show how good Gordy really is
in
like telling stories and like that is his creative thing.
It's his thing.
It's such I just fucking love how cartoony that whole scene is when they do the replay.
Yeah.
That scene and just the whole fact of them trying to find a dead body the entire movie is like the only Stephen King moments that I can see Stephen King in, you know. When he diverts to these like dark darker kind of things. Like, the story seems dark to me. Like, I don't know about you guys, but it's just like he gets revenge. It always seemed like kind of more off than the actual story we're watching. I mean, maybe just more fantastical, obviously, because it's like projectile vomit and everything. But it's the more Stephen King heart that I see in this scene, and obviously the dead body and everything.
It's as if you were watching it on Disney and it was the edited version, but then you found out that in the real version, he then pulls out a shotgun and shoots everyone. Like, that's what you thought was going to happen.
A few behind the scenes things on that is that the Rob Reiner is actually like a staunchly against smoking. Like, he's like a big petitioner in California to get it just banned permanently. And so when he came up with this kids having to smoke in the movie, he specifically wanted it to be cabbage leaves and not tobacco, obviously, because they're kids.
Right. Well, of course.
He was obviously still, like, he didn't want them to do it. He didn't want the kids to smoke at all. But it definitely adds to it, like, especially when he's like, smoke after a meal. It's the best one.
One of my favorite shots was when they I mean, it's very comical. Like, they're talking about, and they're saying they're having childhood conversations, and then eventually they have to guard. One of them has to stay up and guard watch. I think for me, this is my favorite Vern moment. Yes. When the scene of him with the gun, and he'll like bam bam. Noise, bam, bam, and then he goes behind the tree, and all of a sudden the gun pops out from behind the tree. That was awesome. Like, he was really good in that.
Oh my God, it is. It's one of the funniest moments. He's so terrified. Like, why would you even put Vern on watch? Why would you put a gun in that dude's hands? Like, if you're his friend, man.
You guys are hurt something.
You just don't do that, man. You don't.
We got to go back to Barfarama real quick, just because I think we gloss over it just a little bit. And it's like the train scene for me and then this scene for me.
Those are your big scenes.
So Lard asks, what's his actual name?
Doesn't matter. Okay. It's Lard ass, dude.
Something Hogan, Hogan or whatever is like his name.
So Paul Hogan. His whole like backstory. But it's kind of incredible, like the way how they get away with telling this whole story within the movie. It's the whole, all the backstory and everything like that. Like, he's the big guy in the town, so he's gonna get revenge on the fattest way possible that he can, drinking what, like motor oil,
castor oil.
Which I had to, of course, look up. That is like a thing. It was an old remedy to make you throw up.
Okay. Yeah.
And relieve, like, constantly. I mean, it makes you come out all your holes. Things come out of your holes when you do that. And he drinks a whole one.
Yeah. Cracks a raw egg into his mouth on top of it.
It's so fucked up.
Oh my God.
The way the town is all against him, though, is
boom,
so
baba, boom
baba boom boom baba.
Like, when I think it's the mayor or something like that who's introducing everybody or something like that. Someone says, "Hey, Lardass.
Chow down, wide load."
That's it. He's like, "Chow down, wide load." And the mayor's like, anyway.
He even calls him, "Hey, Lardass. I mean, Paul." It shows maybe how far we've come in, like, bullying type things in the modern era. Because, like, that was totally acceptable for the whole town to be like, "That kid's fat.
Yeah.
Fuck him. Yeah. Like, let's make fun of him.
Let's make fun of him."
It was throw up was made of, the barf was made of blueberry pie filling and cottage cheese. Just having that in your mouth.
Doesn't sound too bad, honestly.
Not too bad, but
put it on some crackers. Or
you bake that feta and I'm in, dude.
Yeah, that's right. There you go, baby.
Hey,
all
right.
You know I love that feta cheese, bro.
So we get all their watch scenes and everything like that, and Teddy's doing his, like, military thing, and it's kind of funny. But we get to the sentimental stuff with Chris and Gordy. I love the line where he says, "The kind of talk that seemed important until you discover girls." Or this is that's he says that, that
that's when they're talking about what's your cherry flavor piss.
Yeah, yeah.
Sincerely.
Yeah. And I think that line is on a poster.
Is it really?
Like, it's like the quote of the movie that's on the that they pulled.
I did
for the
see
poster.
That poster too.
I'm like, what?
I think the trailer actually had. That's one of the first things in the trailer for the movie.
It's like, okay.
It's one of those things that, like, what food would you live on, you know, for the rest of your life? Cherry Pez. Well, what the hell is Goofy?
Cherry flavor piss.
Like, you know,
is he a dog?
Well, he can't be a dog. He drives and wears a hat. Like, it's like, God, you're right. What the hell is he? And it's just like, oh, all the deep questions that you need answers as a kid, right? Yeah,
the kind of talk that seemed important until you discover. I love that.
That's
like,
great.
That's perfect, too.
Yeah.
I felt so sad, though, like, this time around with River Phoenix, man. Like, It's kind of like when I see Heath Ledger. It's just this like, man, he was a fantastic actor.
Right. He was going to be big. He was going to be huge.
And I mean, he was in pretty theory much. Like he became this huge icon and like heartthrob and actor. But man, like in that scene when he really breaks down, it is beautiful on how well he acts that scene out.
Yeah.
And heartbreaking.
The story he tells about like what happened to him, and you know it goes back to like you like he just gets pigeonholed as this kid who's not going to amount to anything, and that's like terrible to hear because you don't like to think that would actually happen,
no.
But you know it probably does, and like they just know it was me. He's like, yeah, maybe I did steal. The whole story that he tells is about how he stole the lunch money or the milk money or something from a classroom. But then he goes and he felt bad. He gives it back. But then it turns out the teacher who took it
never turned it in. Thanks for turning this in.
And she stole it. And when he tried to do the right thing, but then pinned it on him. So he tried to go do the right thing. And then this teacher that he thought like who would, you know, he knew in his head would do the right thing, does not, and completely throws him under the bus because fuck him.
Yeah.
That's a life-changing moment. He could have just said, well, fuck that shit. Then I'm going down the bad road. Right. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah. He said that Rob Reiner gave him the direction of, like, just give me a, because he wasn't, like, kind of getting the scene. He said, think of a time where, like, adults let you down, you know, because that's what his whole character is like adults just pigeonholing him, as you said, into this one kind of category and just letting him down all the time. And this is what happens. And so he said that he reverted back to like thoughts of his parents and stuff like that. So it's just like, damn.
Wow.
And that's the take that was used in the film.
Yeah, pretty much that entire last take they used. They said, oh, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Damn. All right, you want to hear Kiefer Sutherland fan theory number one?
Let's roll.
Okay, so you ready for this? Okay, so Kiefer, we're talking like the movie's over, right? He's been focusing on revenge his whole life. Like after this, like he hates Gordy and his friends, and he's focusing on this. He ends up doing something terribly stupid, and ends up actually like getting caught and like kicked out of school. And so he becomes like this depressed nomad for a few years. He just is doing odd jobs, committing crimes. He ends up traveling all the way down to California where he meets a guy named Max who promises he can help this guy improve his luck. He's like, hey, I'm going to help you out here. I know how to make your life better. I feel like things aren't going well for you, Ace. All he has to do is drink this drink. And boom, we have David from Lost Boys, who's born and forever young. Think about it, his ability to recruit people to look cool and to be ruthless.
Oh, my God.
Max found his perfect little ringleader for his vampire game. So then he stayed young forever.
Damn.
Into the 80s when
he
became a vampire. You get it? From Lost Boys?
Oh, shit.
Santa Clara, dude.
There it is.
Wow.
That's my first one. People Second one's strange, probably a little man. Better, dude.
People okay. are strange.
Sexy sax man.
I like it. I'm into
it. I'm into that.
Well, I think the second one's better. That's coming up a little
bit. Okay. So, yeah, save the best for last. Thank you.
Well, okay, so we moved on from the fire. We're dealing with the gang now, right? They're playing mailbox baseball.
Yeah.
Did that give you a little dazed and confused?
100%.
I knew you would. I had to find out what mailbox baseball was.
Just committing fraud after fraud after fraud.
No big deal. Do you know the rules for mailbox baseball?
No.
Okay, so from what I can figure out is missing the mailbox completely or shattering it into pieces is an out. Hitting it is hitting it and knocking it over is a single, and completely removing it from the post is a home run.
Okay.
I must also say the confused breakfast in no way condones this act.
No way.
Tampering with mailboxes is a felony offense.
It's a felony offense.
Thank you, Bush. Get out of the car.
Go, man. Just go,
just
man.
Just fucking go, dude.
But apparently, like, this is a thing. I mean, now we've seen two movies where destroying mailboxes is a thing. Like, apparently, this was a thing that kids did.
Honestly, though, mischief. Like, I don't condone the uses of, like, that kind of thing to pass the time or anything like that, but times were a little simpler, you know, when we didn't have phones and the video games and the porn hubs and, you know, all the
podcasts,
all the Steams and stuff. You know, we didn't have that, and so we had to revert to killing mailboxes.
You're saying we. Like, have you done this before?
The royal we.
Oh, wait. Also, I wanted to say, so did you notice what music was playing while they were beating mailboxes?
Oh, yeah.
It was Great Balls of Fire. And it had me thinking, like, was this like gangster rap or heavy metal to them back
right,
then?
Right, right.
Because they're rebellious, so they're not like listening to mom and dad's music. That's or true. Pop music.
So was
Great Balls of
Jerry
Fire
Lewis
like fucking
asshole.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah.
I can't believe they're listening to Great Balls of Fire right now.
Wait a second. Yeah, Jerry Lewis was a disruptor, man.
Yeah.
He was. He was a bad boy in the music world.
Just saying, they're pulling up to the gas station bumping Great Balls of Fire, and old ladies are like, oh my God.
Oh my goodness. Gladys, get your purse and clutch your pearls.
Don't tell me what to do, Chlorine.
Chlorine. Clarice and Marine together.
Chlorine.
You guys don't know a person named Chlorine.
Isn't that a pool chemical?
Chlorine. Yeah, just chlorine and chlamydia walking down the street, just having a good old time.
Beautiful names.
Having a girls' night.
Sean just got a dog, and I think we're getting a name change coming right up. Chlorine.
Chlorine.
Oh, my God.
So then we have that point, though, where they're, I always thought, another Mandela effect here. I always knew in my head that they were doing, like, tattoos or whatever. But did you see what it was?
Just scarification.
Scarification. Razor blades.
The rustiest pieces of shit they could find, it looks like.
Hold still, I'm messing up the snake part. It's like, the fuck does it matter? You're cutting his skin. God.
And you get more of Ace, like, you legitimately believe Ace that he says, if you guys had $2,000, I'd kill you.
Oh, yeah. Straight
faced. And they're like, uh-huh, yes, he would.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so final scene, you guys. The next day, the boys swim across a swamp and discover it is filled with leeches. Gordy faints after finding a leech in his underwear. That's the nice way to say it. After more hiking, the boys locate Ray Brower's body. Ace and his gang arrive, announce that they are claiming the body, but Gordy pulls a gun out. Ace demands the weapon, but Gordy refuses. Ace and his gang retreat, vowing revenge. The four boys report it to the authorities via an anonymous phone call. They walk back to Castle Rock and part ways. Gordy narrates that Vern and Teddy grew distant over the next few years. Chris managed to stick it out in school with Gordy and went to college to become a lawyer. However, he was killed in the stabbing incident that Gordy had been reading in the paper to start the film. Back in present day, Gordy closes the film as he finishes the memoir he's been writing about his childhood and leaves to take his dumbass son and his friend out swimming. That's what it says in my notes, guys. That was in Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah. That's the wiki.
Got to start off with the leech scene.
Yeah, I love when it's all like, right. It's not that deep. We can walk across. Kerplunk.
And you know what? It goes into just them like, oh, Gordy's trying to get out of here. And he's not going to go anywhere. And they just dogpile.
Yep.
And then they discover him. And I'll tell you what, guys. I really thought leeches were going to be a bigger fucking deal in my life. I think we all did, man. I thought every pond I was going to go into or every like body of water that wasn't a pool was going to have leeches in it.
And that they were invisible.
Yep.
And that they got on your skin and you wouldn't feel them.
Yep. Yep.
And then when you got out of the water, then they would appear fully attached to your body.
Yep. Correct.
Because
they fill up with blood.
Yes,
they're clear really until they fill up with blood. Your blood.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
They're like Predator when he's like invisible, but you can kind of see the outline of him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Those are just baby predators. Those are just
that's what leeches are.
Holy shit. So a leech consumes a full human being and becomes a real predator?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Predator sperm.
No thanks, dude.
Predator sperm.
Predator sperm.
Predator sperm.
I love the... I want to go back to the times where, like, you could be fully submerged in water and not worry about your phone, like, at all times. Like, because when they jump in the water, they're having a good time, doing pile up and stuff like that. It's just like, and when they dropped in the water, I'm like,
their phones are done.
If they recreated Stand By Me in 2021, they would have made it that far. They would have all fallen in the water, immediately jumped out, and been like, my phone's fucked. I'm going home. Yep. And they would have all left. Yeah, and never found the body.
Oh, damn it. My iPhone 11 Plus. Damn it.
Damn it. They would have all taken their VO scooters and to the location instead.
Dude, Sean, I wondered if you noticed this. I did not notice this back in the day until this rewatch. When they get... when they're on the train tracks and they finally get to the location of where the body is, mm-hmm. and they start spreading out, that the wind is howling in that.
Yeah.
Like, and the trees and everything around it are just blowing like crazy. I don't know how they plan that, but that gives me the most haunting, eerie
yeah.
vibe I've ever seen. Like, they finally get to where the body is, and it's just like chaos of wind.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I don't feel like they play off of that in the movie because they're like, well, it's just windy today. Let's get through this. But, like, I loved the way that scene looked.
It does make you feel like a certain way. Like, because, like, I mean, we're from Iowa where a lot of tornadoes happen and stuff like that. Like, we know when that wind picks up and stuff like mm-hmm. that. It's just like, well, this ain't good. This is kind of out of nowhere, you know. It's a bad omen, pretty much.
It's a goocher, man.
It's a goocher.
It's a goocher, man.
It'll get you. You want to get that 60-mile-an-hour wind. That's a sloocher right there. Yeah, no, I feel
it's
that.
A fucking derecho.
Damn. Say.
You know that. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this scene where and it kind of calms down when they do go
it
down
does,
there.
It does, yeah.
and there's no music, it's just kind of silent, and they're just kind of looking at it, and it's the purest form to me that, like, in any movie that's ever been made of, like, kids realizing that they're mortal, you know, because this whole time, especially dodging trains and everything like that, getting attacked by leeches, they probably kind of feel a little invincible, you know, because they're kids. Yeah. Nothing can happen to kids. We're kids, you know. Yeah, Ace is a bully, but he won't really kill us, really.
Right.
But then there's a dead body right in front of him,
and it's their age.
Yeah. It's really, really haunting.
Yeah. It becomes like you said at the very beginning, Sean. It's an image that kind of burns into you, like, and your mind distorts it over time if you don't revisit the movie.
100%.
So, like, it really does become almost more disturbing as time goes on. You haven't revisited it, and you think about that, and you think about if you know, this started out as an idea that people they're kids, and like, you guys want to see a dead body?
Yeah.
And it sounded like, because at that point it just sounds like a ghost story, or it sounds like a little story that you're going to tell your friends, and then it becomes real, and they see him, and he's literally been knocked out of his shoes from this train. You see one of the shoes,
yeah,
like, actually sitting in the bushes and stuff that was right there. And he's just there with his eyes open. And
it's like they didn't expect to actually find him.
Yeah. It's a jarring image.
And I don't know, like, what people expect to, like, when you go, like, if we put ourselves in these kids' shoes, like, we're going to go see a dead body. Like, it's a dead body, a dead human being. What do we expect it to look like? Okay, what's the last dead body you might have seen? It's like in a casket with the eyes closed, all made up and everything like that.
Wearing a suit.
This one is in its clothes. It's all dirty. It's a little bloated.
Probably smells.
Eyes are open. Yeah, it is. It's. I'm glad they went with that because it is terrifying, but it's also like they treat it also respectfully. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. It's done really well.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously then Gordy breaks down because this is sort of his closure moment with his brother, right? Where he says he didn't cry during his brother's funeral, and now it's like he can almost do that. He's like witnessing death again,
right.
And he can close that chapter in a way.
This is the moment that made me cry on rewatching this. Just what Chris was saying to him. He's like, my dad fucking hates me. He's like, he just doesn't understand you.
Yeah.
Just keep saying that. And it's like, it's the truth, man. He doesn't.
He just doesn't know.
And like, it's a shame. It's a real fucking shame that, because Chris knows how great of a person he is. All his friends know how great of a person he is, you know?
Well,
he's got so much value, and his dad just can't fucking see it.
And Gordy, don't you wait. Like, when you're going to make all that money from being a famous writer, dad's going to want to hang out at your rich little mansion all day long. He's going to love you. But just you got to get to that point, bro.
Right.
And Chris, like, Gordy helped Chris out a little bit ago in the night before. Now, Chris, they are truly best friends.
Right.
I mean, and that really shows it.
Right. I just think when there's such a difference and such a contrast, this is their coming of age moment, right? This is the change that's like going to be happening. It's a very impactful thing for these kids at this age. And then comes the contrast of Ace and
the
gang.
Here they come.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't going to treat it this way. They're just like, cool, there it is, let's call somebody, let's get this going so we can get our faces in the paper. And the standoff is, again, it is just the anxiety I got from this standoff. I'm not like Chris just, I'm not moving. No, mm-hmm. we did this. Like you can't just come in and take it because you're older, you know?
Yep.
There's more of you and all this stuff. And it's like, no, we found it. Like that we're going to do the right thing and we're going to do this the right way. Ace is just seems really ready to kill him.
Yeah. And Chris seems to know that this is going to not end well.
Yeah.
He's like, it's principle. I can't do it.
Yeah.
There was a fan theory. Here's the second one about Ace. I saw this on Reddit, and it's too good. Here's the theory. Gordy suspects that Ace was the one that killed his brother.
Ooh.
Which is why he says, no, Ace, just you.
Just you.
And we what saw...
The most badass line.
Unbelievable. Yeah, nope. I don't care.
What are you going to do? Shoot us all? No, Ace.
Just you.
Just you. So cool, man.
And we saw the game of chicken that Ace played on the road, right? We know Denny died in a car accident, so maybe it was Ace that was playing chicken with him on the road, and it's just this kind of rumor, like that's not proved, but we got this rumor, and even Ace says, come on, LaChance, give me the gun. You must have at least some of your brother's good sense.
Ooh.
Like there's this, he's really digging on Gordy about his brother.
Yeah.
It's like he just has no fucking soul. He killed his brother, and now he's just fucking with Gordy too.
Right.
So
it's a crazy fan theory on that.
I dig it. I like that too.
Yeah, you know, it makes me wonder if some of the reason that he came back to this story or this time in his life is because of when, maybe not the only reason, but obviously this is an important point in their life together. When he reads this story, and Chris is about to get stabbed in the throat by Ace.
Ooh, right.
And in the paper, he reads he was stabbed in the throat, died almost instantly. Mm. So it's like it somehow came back around. And I don't want to go to the theory of like maybe it was Ace who was
the
there later in
him.
Life.
Yeah.
I feel like
I mean,
that
my brain immediately started.
Okay,
saying that.
So I'm glad I wasn't the only one. But you're just like, gosh, it's like there's too much coincidence
in this
story that he's telling and what happened to him at the end. Mm. So.
And then even that slow, haunting Stand By Me playing in the background when they return to town where you don't pick up that it's Stand By Me, but it is.
Yeah.
And it's this slow, weird kind of mono. That's a really cool way to just bring all, for when he starts telling those monologues of like, we grew apart. And
big fan of that scene, by the way. Oh. I like, especially like the Stand By Me, who was inspired by this movie. The Sandlot.
Yeah.
Inspired by this movie. I love that parting away scenes. You get that. And from that reviewer is like, what happened to all of them? We don't know what happened to this guy or that guy. It's like, he just told us.
He just told us exactly what happened.
And then, if you want to know what happened to Kiefer, just listen to Mike.
Just listen to Mike.
Not
if I see you first.
That's one of my favorite things about this movie is we get that parting of ways thing. And I'm just a big fan of it.
So, okay, before we end this, we kind of glanced over it, but I almost think it's a good way to end. So that deer scene, right? They wake up from the campfire, and Gordy sees this deer, and they make eye contact, and the deer leaves. And he's like, I never told anyone about that till now. Bothered the shit out of me. I'm like, what does this have to do with anything?
Right.
I hated that moment, but I had to read about it, and I had to be like, why? What is this? And I found an article, Victoria Large from the Brattle Theater Film Notes.
100%.
I just hit, right? I mean, very famous. I just typed in deer scene, Stand By Me. What does it mean? And she wrote this, and I want to read it verbatim because it's unbelievable. She said, Stand By Me is one of only a few great films about childhood friendship, and it captures so well the magic of spending a late summer day or night on an outdoor adventure. Gordy's encounter with the deer reminds me of evanescent moments from my own childhood when something just a little out of the ordinary appeared and bewitched me. Sometimes we're eager to share these moments in conversation, and sometimes, like Gordy, we're reluctant to. The deer scene gives us a moment to breathe after Gordy's friend Chris breaks down in tears over remembered betrayal, and before the boys at last find the dead body we've been looking for, forcing themselves to face mortality head on. Director Rob Reiner cuts from a close-up of Gordy to the deer and then back, highlighting the similarities between the two and making it easy to link his character to a deer, a connection that underscores Gordy's innocence and vulnerability just before the encounter with the body will lay bare his grief over the death of his older brother, and a face-off with the town bully will test his courage. This is a coming-of-age story, and the deer's appearance emphasizes how Gordy is forced to grow and change. In a bittersweet and nostalgic film about how time refuses to stand still, This brief scene reminds us of the rare magic moments when it feels like it does.
Mm. And on a train track, no less. Right there. Where deers get hit all the time.
Right there.
And that dude got hit by a train.
Yeah, in a nostalgic film about how time refuses to stand still, reminds us of the rare magic moments when it feels like it does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, damn.
Yeah, that's deep.
My least favorite part of the movie all of a sudden became my first after I read that. It's and I owe it to that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Mm-hmm. Hell, that's wonderful.
Well, there we are, boys. So, what do you think? We got to give it a modern day rating right now. We just tried to break this thing down with a modern eye. AJ, what do you think, man? What are you rating this movie now as an adult here?
I've felt like so much so much coming back and thinking about like my own childhood and how I would float between groups and I would follow my brothers around, but then I also try to be hanging out with like and making new friends and whether I was successful or failed at it and everything. And then you have those friends that grew apart and that become a little estranged over time as you grow up. And it really drags it up. And like one of the reviews said, like there's something that almost every generation seems to be able to latch onto as it continues to move through time. And I really enjoyed it this time, and like this time through, it really struck me really hard a couple of the rewatches, like the first two times I rewatched it, and so I would say I've got to give this an 8.8.
Damn, buddy,
nice.
What about you, Sean?
Yeah, it still holds up. It's Corey Feldman's best performance he's ever given. Maybe all the whole cast, their best performance they've ever given. Rob Reiner's best film, maybe. Misery's up there too. And Stephen King, one of his best kind of short stories that he ever did, I think. And what it means to me, like we've just been talking about this entire time, is just that coming of age kind of innocence being completely washed away once you see a face of a dead kid. And then just kind of hanging out with your bros and that's kind of living in those moments and everything like that. I love it so much. It's probably, I'm going to go 8.5
for the old Shawnee. So for me, yeah, I was only a 4. I just didn't really get this movie, but Richard Dreyfuss really sums it up because, I mean, the written word of this movie, which I'm taking, is probably from the novella.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the words that Richard Dreyfuss says, like when he's narrating, are so perfect. He says, "The summer of 1959, a long time ago, but only if you measure it in years."
Mm-hmm. Only if you measure it in years.
like mind-blowing. I mean, it's true. Like, that was so long ago, but yet it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was so quickly it came back to him. And this movie's just fantastic for me. I'm taking it one notch above Sandlot for me because they're very similar films, but I just think this one's just a little bit better. So I'm a 8.1.
Nice.
Look at that, boys.
Gotcha.
Well played.
Hit save when you're writing. I don't think he ever did.
Yeah, he
just
did.
Shut off his computer. And gone.
I hope that's got auto save.
Yeah.
Whatever that contraption was he was typing on, boy. I don't think it had it.
Yeah. The old Typemaster 3000.
Not going to live off of that of those short story collections for that long, then, Richard Dreyfuss.
Or Stephen King, shall we say, Richard Dreyfuss. Well, we hope you guys enjoy this episode. Means the absolute world to have you here with us. Tune in next Wednesday for a very special episode, different than anything we've done before. Got some stuff planned for you. And following that, we are coming at you with two classics 10 years apart. The Fast and the Furious and Point Break.
Oh, yeah, daddy.
Two very different movies.
Very different movies. After that, we fall off and start heading towards fall and Halloween movies, which is going to be me and Sean's favorite thing in the world. AJ is going to hate us.
Ugh. We just made up a list, man. I'm so excited.
We did that at Cedar Ridge, man, when we were drunk off of whiskey.
They always do this behind my back.
Yeah, dude. Fuck you, dude. You're stupid and shit.
They always call me dumb how I don't like Halloween.
Stupid, dumb AJ.
Stupid, dummy.
So we hope you'll continue to hang out with us and add us on all the fun social medias like AJ is going to tell you about right now.
All the social medias come right after all the podcast platforms that you're already listening on, you're telling your friends to listen to, like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Stitcher, everywhere in between. Make sure you are leaving a review, giving us a thumbs up, or subscribing, of course, wherever you're listening. When you tell your friends about us, you probably just post about it on Facebook as well. Confused Breakfast. Facebook.com/confusedbreakfast, Instagram at Confused Breakfast, TikTok at Confused Breakfast, and of course Twitter at Confused Be Fast.
So stupid.
So dumb. Other than that, you know we've got Patreon, guys.
Yeah.
Make sure you are hitting us up on Patreon. A whole lot of good stuff that we're trying to do for you on there, adding a whole lot of extra content. You get to vote on upcoming movies, all that fun stuff.
Hit up our merch store, you guys. Oh, we got some shirts. We got Humanized the Goons. We got our logo. We got some stickers and a coffee cup.
Coffee cup, bro.
Go ahead and get that shit.
Call us at 319-804-9596. Lots of links in the old show notes, too. You get to check us all out on our personal endeavors that we like to do there. So click on those links, huh?
Judge our music.
Yes, please.
Go judge it.
Judge it. Tell us how shitty we are, please. AJ, where can everybody find you at, man?
AJAYVENS, AJ Vens, anywhere on social media or the interwebs.
Shawnee boy.
I will be at Instagram, on Instagram and TikTok at SeanPryor237. And if you were do Letterboxd, hit me up there and see what I'm watching. Suicide Squad was pretty great.
Pretty cool. I got a new website, acekilleddenny.com. I'm trying to prove it, so I'm needing any sort of stuff I can get
from
here.
Hire a detective?
Yeah, I just need some money to really get the detective work going.
Are you going to get like real strung out and be the actual detective yourself?
Nah, probably not. Oh. I'll probably hire. I'm busy. I got podcasts and
that's
stuff.
That's very true.
It's all the way out in Oregon, man.
Kind of over it, too. Already.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long time ago.
Cold case. Gone cold again.
Cold case. All right, we're getting out of here. Goodbye.
Bye.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.